Dr. Lisa Searle is a young Australian doctor training to be a general practitioner. She decided, even before she started medical training, that she wanted to work with Médecins Sans Frontières, volunteering in the world's hotspots. I speak to her after her return from Haiti and a four-month mission. Well, thank you for your time.
No worries.
Tell me a little bit about your background and your training, first of all. Where and when did you do your medical training?
Okay, so I trained in Tasmania. I've done all my training in Tassie, and I graduated in 2006. Yep. And since then have spent time, well, I sort of started travelling and working overseas from that time.
Right.
And kept coming back to Australia and doing a bit more training here and there. And at the moment I'm training to be a general practitioner.
Okay.
I'm nearly finished, but that's what I've spent the last couple of years doing.
Now, I read somewhere that you'd always wanted to be involved with MSF. Is that right? It was pretty early?
It was, and it definitely influenced my decision to study medicine. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, and then I heard about this incredible sounding organisation and so decided to go down that path. A lot of work and a lot of commitment, I guess, to the cause, and so I signed up for MSF pretty much as soon as I could after graduating from medical school and have never once regretted that any of those decisions that I made along the way.
So how old were you when you realised that's what you wanted?
Probably about 16, I think.
Yeah. Was there anything in particular that sparked that?
I'm not really sure. I think I do remember a lot of stuff going on growing up around the Rwanda genocide. I do remember seeing that on the news. And then I was also studying French at high school, and it was my French teacher at high school who first started talking about Médecins Sans Frontières, and, it just clicked with me, and it just sounded like what I wanted to do with my life.
So you've been to where exactly? What missions have you done?
Okay, I've been to Pakistan and Congo and more recently Haiti.
Okay.
So I've done three missions so far.
Now, in Haiti, you set up a sexual violence clinic, yeah?
That's right. It was an incredible project. It was a startup project. And the devastating thing about Haiti is that we're now 5 years on from the earthquake that devastated the country, and yet so much of the infrastructure still hasn't been rebuilt. And what we know about sexual violence is that in any time of mass population movement, whether that be caused by natural disaster or war or whatever it is, we see an increase in the rates of sexual violence. So in Haiti, you had this double whammy of pretty much all the existing structures caring for victims of sexual violence were destroyed. A lot of the staff were killed in the earthquake.
Right.
So you lost all that expertise and all those structures, and there was a massive increase in the rate. And since the earthquake, 5 years down the track, that rate is still very high.
Yeah.
And the structures have yet to be rebuilt. So we identified that there was a real gap there and decided to go in and start this specific project.
Was sexual violence always a problem in Haiti anyway?
It always has been, yeah. It's one of the countries with a relatively high rate of sexual violence.
Yeah. Did you have a particular interest in sexual violence going in, or was this just a project MSF handed you and you went, yep, okay, I'm on it?
I have always been very interested in women's health and all of the aspects of women's health. So I've done some training in obstetrics. I've done quite a lot of training in sexual and reproductive health. So not just sexual violence, but also contraception, pregnancy care, childbirth, all of that kind of stuff. Contraception is a very big one for me.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I have also worked with sexual violence victims in Congo. That was part of my work in Congo as well. And MSF, Médecins Sans Frontières, were looking for somebody with a background in sexual violence to open this clinic, because part of the job was training up all the new staff. So all of the clinic is completely run by Haitian medical staff, doctors, nurses, psychologists, social workers. But a lot of those staff had very little experience working with victims of sexual violence.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of my job there, to train them all up and then support them through seeing their first patients and getting the clinic up and running.
So take me through it. You arrive in Haiti. You're starting from scratch, presumably. How do you go about setting up a staff and an infrastructure and a training program?
It's a very big undertaking. I guess the first thing is finding a location. Or planning. There's a lot of planning that goes into it first. Project proposals. How are we going to run this clinic? So we work out exactly what we want it to look like before we start.
Right.
And then we go down the path of, okay, these are the things we need to do. We need a clinic location. We need to potentially renovate that clinic and make it usable as a clinic space. And then we need to start recruiting staff. And the recruitment starts with the logistics staff, so drivers, guards, cleaners, cooks, those sorts of people, and then moves on to recruiting the medical staff. So then we just put up notices all over the city and advertise in whatever avenues we can in that particular country, advertise that there are positions open, and we accept all the applications, go through them, interviews, and then select our staff from there.
Are all your doctors and staff female, or is there a mix?
There is a mixture, but majority are female in that clinic.
And what's the size of the female population of doctors in Haiti? Do they have are there a large number, or are they a fairly young?
There is a large number. One of many things that I found very devastating in Haiti is that there are so many skilled, trained, intelligent people that just can't get jobs. The unemployment rate is phenomenally high. And there are a lot of unemployed doctors in the country.
Wow.
It's also very difficult for doctors to work with the government in the government hospitals because they just don't get paid. They get paid very sporadically. They don't get paid very much. And so whenever we would open a position, we were absolutely inundated with applications. And often we ended up employing staff who were kind of overqualified for the jobs that they were doing. And that was very different from other places where I have worked, like in our project in Congo. There pretty much are no doctors in Congo.
Wow.
The level of training is such that most clinics and hospitals are run by nurses.
Yeah.
And so all of our medical staff were, nurses, pharmacists. We didn't have any doctors.
And what were you doing in Pakistan?
Pakistan, I was running a referral maternity hospital. So we were situated right on the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. We probably received a mixture of 50-50, like 50% people from the Pakistani side and 50% refugees coming across the border from Afghanistan. We did everything, so antenatal care, childbirth care, emergency cesareans, that sort of thing. And we had a neonatal nursery as well for the newborn bubs who needed a bit of extra support, and then looking after women after delivery and that sort of thing. So that was a very different project.
It's the thing that's striking me is you're getting the kinds of experiences that nobody your age here in Australia would be getting. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you can run a hospital.
Yeah.
You know?
It's very different. Like the work that I do with MSF is very different than the work I do here. I'm in a different position. And a lot of the time I'm working in a supervisor capacity and worrying about medical supply and rostering and all this kind of stuff that I never have to worry about while I'm working here.
Yeah.
But I do think I really appreciate the differences in the two styles of work, and I appreciate the skills that I get from both aspects. And I do find surprisingly that there's a lot of crossover, I guess, I find it useful.
Yes.
The work that I do with MSF makes my job here, I guess, can make it more rewarding. I kind of notice more things that maybe I wouldn't notice otherwise. And I do think it makes me better at my job here, and vice versa, working here and working in a more one-on-one capacity with seeing patients definitely helps with working over there.
So where are you working right now?
At the moment I'm in Hobart, Tasmania, and I'm working at a general practice.
Right.
I work at a practice where we do lots of refugee healthcare.
Yeah.
So I do general practice, but I also see lots of refugees, and that's also an area I'm very interested in. Very specific group of people, obviously very diverse group of people.
Yeah.
But I also find it's a way for me to kind of keep in contact. I keep in touch with that side of my work, rather than just seeing Australians all the time, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I see a very diverse range of people, often with very traumatic backgrounds, and they really appreciate having a doctor who, and sometimes I'm able to communicate with them in their own language, which is really cool. And cool for me to be able to use my language skills. And for them, it's also having someone that understands a bit about where they've come from and someone who's visited their country or their area.
Do you have any? Do you have a mission coming up? Are you heading off again?
Not lined up yet, but I'm planning to finish my general practice training in the second half of this year, and then planning to head off again after that.
Okay.
I don't know where it will be. It's usually the last thing I find out, and often it will be just getting a phone call saying, can you go to Haiti in a week?
Oh, fabulous.
So I don't know where it will be. I work in – prefer to work French-speaking missions. Now that I've been trained by Médecins Sans Frontières to speak French, and I do really like working in another language. I find that really challenging, and there's also a shortage of French-speaking doctors within the organisation. So it'll probably be either Haiti or another French-speaking African country.
You're dealing with victims of sexual violence. How do you protect yourself mentally and emotionally?
It's a very good question. I think everybody has different strategies for how to deal with that. And it was something I definitely put a lot of emphasis on when training our Haitian staff. The importance of self-care, of if you're not coping, if you've seen something really traumatic, that your supervisors are there to talk to, that the other people are around you, and that we can set up meetings, you know, to debrief if there's traumatic circumstances. I think debriefing is a really useful tool that we use sometimes. So if and when you're working in sexual violence, every case is traumatic. But if there's a case that's particularly affected you or the team or was a bit out of the ordinary, then it's very helpful to get together afterwards and all sit down and just discuss it and go through it. I think that's really important. I also think that the time that I spend in Australia, whilst I'm always working and busy while I'm here, it is a bit of a healing time, and it's a bit of a, it's taking a step away from all of that stuff and realizing that the whole world's not a horrible place. Because when you're working in, if you're working in that kind of environment for a long period of time, you can get a very skewed view of the world, and you just think that everything is violence and pain. And so I think it's very important to have breaks from that and to step away from that and appreciate that there are good people and that there's good stuff going on as well.
How long were you in Haiti?
4 months.
4 months, yeah.
The clinic in Haiti was very interesting because every single case we saw was incredibly emotional, traumatic, unique. All of these, all women. We were open to seeing men as well, but by the time I left, we hadn't seen any male victims. So all the women that we saw had incredibly difficult circumstances. And something that was, something I found really difficult was, this circumstance where a woman is raped, and it's not the physical consequences of the rape, but it's what comes afterwards. It's the social and psychological impacts of that. So that was the case with this 15-year-old girl, that she, her parents found out it had happened and she was kicked out of home. And so a lot of the work that we did with her, of course, we give her emergency medical assistance. We could prevent her from getting pregnant, prevent her from getting HIV, STIs, all of this stuff. But then it became how, what to do with her, how to reconnect her with her community and her family, and that was where the big challenge was. Incredibly devastating case that we saw was an older woman. I think she was about 25, and her family had brought her in, and she had been raped, I think, 2 or 3 days before, and had not eaten or drunk anything since it happened. She'd just been lying in bed in a catatonic state. And the family eventually went, enough's enough, we need to take you to hospital. So by the time she got to us, she was incredibly dehydrated. She was not speaking. She was still in a severe state of shock. So to kind of pull her back from that is going to take a lot of time.
Is it a particularly macho culture?
Macho?
Yeah,
I mean, there are significant gender divides in Haiti. Men have their roles and women have their roles, and they're very clear cut and very divided.
Would you consider working for other aid agencies, or is it MSF that's got your heart?
Yeah, I thought about about it. And when I first started doing aid work, I was working with another organisation for a couple of years,
right,
which was also fantastic. I just feel like Médecins Sans Frontières, I really appreciate their principles of neutrality, impartiality, independence. I love the fact that they work independently. They don't take money from any government agencies or anything like that.
Yep.
They don't pick sides. And I also feel like working within an organisation that has so much experience, it just allows you to get so much more done and be very productive. I think they're so good at what they do in terms of security, in terms of setting up clinics. They've got all the protocols written. So you're working within a framework rather than just kind of being there thinking, oh, my God, this place is horrible. This problem is just enormous. How do I approach this?
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you see yourself doing MSF work for the rest of your career, or are you going to settle into a quiet GP's life, if there is such a thing?
Me and the word settle don't really go very well together.
Okay, I get that, yeah.
So I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I think I will continue working with Médecins Sans Frontières for a good while.
Yeah.
I would like to keep incorporating it into my life. And I will always come back to Tasmania. Tasmania will always be my home and I'll always come back. But I feel like I'm working towards a reasonable balance of working away and being here, being with my family.
Do you recommend it to your friends and your fellow med colleagues?
I definitely do. I think it's such an incredible, rewarding, amazing thing that you can do. And something that a lot of people don't understand is that it's not just doctors. Mm. Médecins Sans Frontières also need nurses, they need pharmacists, they need psychologists, they need admin staff, architects, you know, construction workers. Wow. They need all kinds of different people with different skills, water and sanitation experts. So I talk to a lot of people about it and encourage them to do it because a lot of people think, oh, I'd love to do that work, but I'm not qualified enough. Or I do get a lot of kind of jealousy from colleagues sometimes, which I find quite interesting. Medical colleagues will say, oh, I wish I could do what you do, Lisa. And I just say, well, you can.
Yeah, you just got to organise it.
Yeah, you can do it. It's just about the choices that you make and if you want to make it happen. And it doesn't have to be a lifelong commitment. Yeah.
If as a 15 or 16-year-old you'd known that MSF took a whole range of different professions, would you still have gone for medicine?
Yeah, good question. I think I still would have gone for medicine.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Have you got doctors in the family or is it just a...
No doctors in the family.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what drew me to medicine, but as I said, I've never regretted it. I love being a doctor.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.